Hey everybody, time for another movie retrospective. This time around, I'm doing one that I've been wanting to do for like a really, really long time. And actually, you know, as I said a couple weeks ago when we went into FYE in the mall across from our movie theater where we go see the movies for the matinee show, they have like all those cheap DVDs in the front.
Yeah.
And I got this one for like $3 and I was super, super excited.
Yeah, and it was a special edition DVD. It had clear slipcover.
Yeah, and it's got like a lot of like special features and stuff like that.
They got a bunch of steel books over there I got my eyes on too. They got a steel book Labyrinth.
I kind of want that.
Yeah.
That I mean, I wanted a lot of the steelbooks. I love the steelbook packaging. It's like so cool. They don't have I don't think they have a steelbook of this movie, but they did have one of Labyrinth and a bunch of other ones.
Yeah, there was another steelbook that I had that they had there, and I was going, oh, I was almost getting ready to bite on it. What? It wasn't Labyrinth. It was another one.
I can't remember.
It was a horror movie, I think.
Yeah.
Or a science fiction movie.
Yeah, they had pretty much like all your classic movies they have steelbooks of. But yeah, I just got like a regular DVD of this one because I actually saw this movie in the theater when it came out and really, really loved it. And I've kind of been recommending it to like everybody that's into horror movies because it's one that kind of slipped under the radar, and I think that's like super unfortunate. Yeah. This is Stir of Echoes. It came out in 1999. Now, it's actually based on a 1958 novel by Richard Matheson, who obviously very famously wrote I Am Legend. He wrote What Dreams May Come. He wrote a bunch of Star Trek episodes, Twilight Zone episodes. You know, he's like a hugely famous writer. He wrote Duel, which, you know, best TV movie ever made that Steven Spielberg directed.
This is like a ghost movie / psychic powers movie. And I think it got overshadowed because this is around the same time a bunch of other good movies were out, like Sixth Sense.
Yeah, honestly.
And it had a lot of elements like Sixth Sense a little bit.
Yeah, I think that was kind of the one. That's the thing. This may have come out, like, because I saw The Sixth Sense in the theater, too. And if I'm remembering correctly, because me and my friend Jen, I mean, you know, we used to go to the movies, like, all the time, because, you know, that's pretty much all there was to do where we grew up. So I'm pretty sure that we saw Stir of Echoes and Sixth Sense, like, within a week of each other, or maybe even, like, within a couple of days of each other.
Yeah.
So I think they came out, like, the same week.
Off the top of my head, though, I can see why this one was forgotten. It's a good movie, all right, but... The Sixth Sense was a very straightforward, linear kind of story that was very simple and stuck with you, and it had that twist at the end
honestly,
M. Night does.
Yeah.
And that was very memorable. This one is a little more complicated. It's a little more of a complicated and intricate story, and I think it's not as easy to remember. I really think it's...
Even though I always liked... you know what I'm... And I'm going to say it, and I've seen a lot of other people say this too, so I'm not a crazy person. I actually like this one better than The Sixth Sense. The Sixth Sense I also liked, and like I said, I saw it in the theater, and I've seen it since then a couple of times, and I still enjoyed it. But I feel like your enjoyment of it is lessened when you know what the twist is. You know what I mean?
Sixth Sense?
Yeah.
Sixth Sense is a one.
It's kind of like a one-shot deal. Type thing. Like, once you know what the twist is, you're just kind of like, oh, you kind of know. I mean, it's good to watch it again because then you can try to pick up on, like, all the clues they were giving you. Because it seems obvious in hindsight what the twist is. But,
And people got used to that director real quick, M. Night Shyamalan.
He was easy
to predict what he was going to do.
And really, I think The Sixth Sense was...
That was easily his best movie,
and that was like his first one.
Although, you know, I gotta say, that was a strong movie that he did, but Glass and his superhero spinoff was good, too.
Yeah, I've liked some of his other movies.
Yeah, I like those, too. Yeah.
But none of them even approached being as good as The Sixth Sense.
What was that first superhero one that he did? What was it called?
Unbreakable.
Unbreakable.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really liked that. And then Glass was really good. I didn't see the one in the middle.
Split was the one in the middle. We haven't seen that one yet. We did see Glass in the theater.
Yeah, but, you know, kind of invented his own MCU in a way. His own Marvel universe.
Yeah, I think that's what he was trying to do.
And I think he did a good job. I'd like to see one of those again.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this was a good movie, though. It didn't deserve to be forgotten.
And that's what, because even when I talk to, like, people that are super into horror movies, particularly, like, supernatural horror movies, I would actually call this, it's a horror movie in the sense that it's got, like, some horrific imagery, it's a ghost story, stuff like that. I think it leans more toward, like, a supernatural thriller or maybe a mystery, because it has, like, a mystery, like, a murder mystery type aspect to it. Which is what I like about it. I think what ended up happening, like I said, it came out pretty much the same time as The Sixth Sense. I think the Blair Witch Project had also come out, like, right around that time.
Yeah.
So there was, like, a lot of...
A lot of competition.
There was a lot of competition in that area. And I think people maybe erroneously thought that this movie was like just like The Sixth Sense, just because, yes, this movie does have a kid that can see dead people also, but he's not the main focus of the story. I mean, the only reason that that kid is really in there is just so they can show like the kind of like genetic component of like the psychic, you know, like the seeing dead people type thing. Because Kevin Bacon is really the star of the show. I mean, yeah, the kid's not.
The movie kind of reminded me of a very high quality a haunting episode.
Yeah,
mixed with Flatliners. Visually, it visually kind of looked like Flatliners, and had Kevin Bacon in it too. But I liked it; it was a good movie.
It's like a night. Yeah, you can tell it came from the 90s.
Yeah.
But there's, I mean, there's like so much good to recommend this. I remember, like I said, I remember seeing this in the theater, and we saw it like at the last show, so it was like super late when we let out. And this kind of like some of the imagery in this like kind of like creeped me out a little bit. It's a very, like I said, it's a slow burn. It's like a murder mystery. There's kind of like some humor in it too, like just the way the characters like react with each other, like they just say funny because they're like realistic and they're kind of like working class, so they just like have these funny like conversations. But there's like some really great imagery in this that like really kind of creeped me out, and like, you know, I remembered it like later on.
It sounds, the movie actually, when you look at the story of the movie, it does fit a lot of the paranormal stories you would see like on a haunting.
Yeah,
it's just that It is a movie. It's you can definitely tell that it's a movie, and it's in a movie format, so it's not like a low quality haunting episode. But a lot of those same themes there: psychic abilities and mysteries behind a ghost, and who killed the and why, what the ghost wants, and psychic. I don't want to spoil it. You know.
Well, I probably will, but
you're
gonna
spoil it later.
But I'm just going to say, because, like, this is one that a lot of people haven't seen, because, like I said, it kind of got, you know, shit. It got, not shit on, but it got forgotten, because it got really good reviews at the time.
Yeah, if you're one of our regular listeners.
It got forgotten about.
If you're one of our regular listeners who likes paranormal stuff and mysteries and true crime, you'd actually would like this movie.
I definitely feel like you would. Because I think what makes it creepier, maybe, and I think this is kind of a similar thing that made The Sixth Sense creepy as well, was that it's very much grounded in reality. I mean, they don't really have... I mean, the characters are very realistic characters. They're just like regular Joe-type characters.
Yeah, they're not dishwashers, and then they're living in palaces.
Right,
they're
exactly.
Like, I work at the restaurant, and here's my home, and it's like a
million-and-a-half-dollar
home.
Because I've seen this movie like 3 or 4 times. I said one of the wonderful things about this movie... Because one thing that bothers me a lot in movies, even movies I really like, is people who, I mean, and they explicitly say what their job is or, you know, something like that. And then they live in a much nicer place than they would ever be able to afford. You know what I mean? And it's like, that really, really bugs me.
And they're working on 1.5 income. Maybe the girlfriend has a half a job and you're like, where's this money coming
from? Right. Or they're just like sitting around in the house all the time and they don't ever seem to go to their job.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? But this one I really like. It's because...
doctors that are always home. That's one that really blows my mind.
Yeah, because they're
a doctor and he's always home.
Yeah, nurses and doctors are always working.
Yeah, they're never
always on call.
Yeah.
For sure. But that was one of the things that I mean, of the myriad things that I always liked about this movie, was that in this movie, Kevin Bacon plays a guy named Tom Witzke. He is like a telephone lineman. Like, he's just up on, they show him his little bucket truck and everything like that. And his wife, Maggie, is, I think she's a nurse or some kind of, she was wearing scrubs a couple times in the movie. And they were talking about different shifts and stuff like that. But they live in this kind of like working class neighborhood in Chicago. And the house is like kind of run down. Shit doesn't work. It's like, you know, it's not a dump or anything like that. But it's a realistic, you know, and they actually talk about economic issues. She's like, oh, he's been calling in sick. He's used up all his sick time. They're going to start docking him if he doesn't go. Like, they're talking about regular people problems.
Yeah.
Which, so when the supernatural shit starts to happen, I feel like you can more, you can relate to them better because they're just like normal people.
And that's why it always takes you back to kind of like something like a true paranormal, an account of something that truly happened in a paranormal case.
Yeah.
Kind of like you see in, you know, like The Haunting of Summer Wind or something. You know what I mean? They're talking about the economic problems that you're going through because it's like a long term. It's been going on for months, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it kind of added a sense of realism.
And there's the whole thing, too. And this kind of ties in with, like, with the murder mystery and everything. But the house that they're living in, and I'm not sure if you caught this because I know you weren't really, like, super paying attention, but the house that they're living in is a rental house. And the guy that lives across the street that's a friend of theirs, that's their landlord because he has, like, three. So he's, like, when Kevin Bacon, you know, whose name is Tom in the movie, when he starts, like, tearing up the house, like, at the behest of this ghost. Like, of course, the landlord is freaking out about it, like, for a couple of different reasons. But like I said, so there's this just kind of... And they actually shot all of it in Chicago, too, on location, except for the scenes in the theater, which I'll get to in a minute. But, so you really get a sense... Because, you know, the characters... You know, the two main characters, Tom and Maggie, it's like they go to, like, a party at their neighbor's house. They go to, like, a block, you know, like a block party type thing. So you really get a sense it's almost like this neighborhood in Chicago, and I'm not sure exactly what neighborhood it is, but it's almost like a character in the movie. It's like, you know, I really like when movies have, like, a sense of place, and I think this really has that. And the guy that was, because I watched a lot of the extra features on it, and the guy that was the cinematographer on this said that he loved the stonework and brickwork in Chicago, which I didn't know this, but he said, well, there's a loss ever since the Great Fire of Chicago. You're not allowed to build anything out of wood anymore. Because they don't want the whole city burning down again. So it has to be some kind of masonry. It has to be brick or stone. So all the buildings are brick or stone. And he's like, they just have these great, like, warm colors, like all these great, like, browns and yellows and stuff. So he wanted the whole movie to look like that and to really have, like, a sense of place. And like you said, it's not quite as Baroque as Flatliners.
But it kind of looked that palette.
But it had that 90s, like, that kind of warm... Yeah, glowy sort of palette.
Yeah, something about that lens that they used and the color palettes that they used. I mean, even that Arnold Schwarzenegger movie kind of had that. What was End of Days.
Yeah.
And that was from around that same time, and it kind of had that kind of goldish, reddish kind of hue to everything.
It's interesting how you don't notice it at the time, but then in hindsight, because remember, I think like in the 2000s, like everything was teal or orange.
Yeah.
Like they had everything
Matrix.
Like
Matrix made everything steely blue and green.
Green.
Yeah.
The whole movie was green. We just watched that again the other day and I'd forgotten how green that
movie
was.
Yeah, I hadn't seen it in a long, long time. I've only seen the first one.
The whole thing is just green.
I got them all now. And it was a good movie.
Yeah.
You didn't seem to like it as much as I did.
Well, I didn't like it much the first. I like The Matrix, but I feel like. And I felt like this when it first came out, too. I felt like it thought it was a lot cleverer than it actually was. I think I just got that kind of... Or it thought it was a lot more as, like, look at all the cool, like, goth shit and everything like that.
I wasn't looking at it the same way. You know why? Because at that time when that came out, I had almost a very rudimentary understanding of what the internet was.
Yeah.
So it did have to.
So it did seem like, yeah.
It's kind of childish, the explanations of now. Oh, by the way, we are actually in a virtual reality.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow, mind blown. You know what I mean? The aliens are doing it. You know, they weren't really aliens. It was AI doing it. Anyway, we're getting into another movie.
Yeah.
But I remember at the time, the concept of a virtual reality was, to me, a new concept.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, wow, wow. Okay. Ooh, that's heavy. So, you know, it was just a movie of its time.
Yeah, it definitely was.
Yeah.
This one, like I said, it does have some 90s kind of things where, you know, the two of them are... They have, like, a little kid, and they're, like, you know, doing the whole family thing, and she's just found out she's pregnant again. So they're kind of doing the suburban thing, but they're still, you know, kind of young, hip 1999 people. They're going to parties. He's got his Social Distortion shirt. She's got her little... You know, the little belly shirts and the little... Remember those necklaces they had that were, like, black cords with, like, the little silver... Like, she had all that kind of shit going on.
The only thing she was missing was, like, JNCOs and a tongue ring and shit.
Yeah, did she have a nose ring?
I don't know.
I don't think she had a nose ring.
She had a tongue ring and some JNCOs.
Yeah.
But, that was a cute look.
It wasn't quite that bad, but it was, you could tell it was, like, made in 1999.
That was a cute look, though, looking back.
I know, I liked it, too.
Only, like, little pretty motherfuckers could wear that shit, though, and
well,
get away with it.
True.
You had to be 20 and be a little pretty motherfucker to wear that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyway, all right. So, I actually did read the book that this was based on, the Richard Matheson book. I have it up in my closet there. Came out in 1958. It had some differences. The character's name was different, blah, blah, blah. But the story frame was pretty much the same. Now, this was written and directed by David Koepp. He's directed some other films, but he's actually most famous as a screenwriter. He actually wrote the first Jurassic Park, and I think the second one, too. Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull, the first Mission Impossible, War of the Worlds, and the 2002 Spider-Man, among many other things. So he's like a big deal.
Some of those were good movies.
Screenwriter, yeah, some of them were good movies.
Yeah.
This was actually the second movie he ever directed. There was one called Trigger Effect, which I don't think I ever saw. That came out in 1996, but this was his second one. And he was a big fan of Richard Matheson, and he but he had never read this book. He just kind of stumbled across it when he was in like a secondhand bookstore one day, and he's like, oh, I've never read this. When he read it and he loved it, and he's like, you know, he had really been wanting to do like a horror movie or like a mystery type thing, so he asked if he could adapt it, and Richard Matheson said that he could, so he adapted it to the screen. So what we have going on here, like I said, Kevin Bacon, who is really good in this, I think this is probably one of his best roles. I mean, I love Kevin Bacon, who I call the Baconator affectionately.
Yeah.
But
he's running from one Tremors movie to the next constantly, too. Every time he's running, he goes, Tremors 6 coming. Yeah. I just talking shit.
I know. But, so like I said,
I think he was only in two of those, wasn't he? In Tremors.
I think he was in the first two. I don't think he was in the other ones.
Right.
I haven't seen all the Tremors movies. I think I saw the first four.
Fucking Tremors.
But I like Tremors.
First one was good, man.
It was a good movie.
They kind of get worse as they go, but that's just the way movies
are. Well, that's
are.
How all movies, yeah. that's they all get worse as they get older. But yeah, so in this, like I said, he's playing kind of a working class Chicago guy. He's like kind of that type of dude where, you know, he's still pretty young. He's in a band. You know, but he's having to work as a phone lineman, and he has a conversation with his wife at some point. He's like, you know, I never thought I'd be so ordinary. So he's just kind of like some guy that, you know, he's trying to do his best, but you could tell that he wanted a lot more out of his life, and he's kind of like disappointed with how shit turned out. And like I said, he's really great in this. He has like the kind of Chicago accent, and he's all swearing and shit like that. And they're just the rapport with him and the wife and the wife's sister, Lisa, who's played by Ileana Douglas. And she's probably, other than Kevin Bacon, she's probably my favorite character in this, just because she's kind of like one of those hippy-dippy, you know, hypnotist type of chicks. And, like, she knew her sister was pregnant, like, without her having to tell her. And, like, she's all into, like, New Agey, like, astrology and shit like that. So they're just going about their normal business. Now, it's hinted very from the beginning of the movie, like I said, and I think this is why people like thought, oh, it's just like The Sixth Sense, even though it's really not. They have a son named Jake, who I guess he's probably 4 or 5 or something like that, and they're hinting that he can see ghosts.
He's talking to somebody.
Yeah, he's like in the tub at the beginning, and yeah. He's like, what does it feel like to be dead? And he's like talking to them.
As the movie opens, he's talking to ghosts.
Yeah, and it's like they don't really like hammer on it hard, like, and it's almost like their parents don't really notice it, like they just think he's just dicking around and being a little kid or whatever, because they're always talking to nothing, you know. So they establish that he can already see dead people, but, you know, that his parents aren't really, like, paying attention to it. They just think he's got an imaginary friend or whatever. Now, very soon, they kind of put the kid to sleep, and then they go to their friend's house that lives across the street. They go to a party over there. Now, at this party, Lisa starts talking about hypnotism, and I guess she had done like a class in it or something like that. And she starts talking about, oh, you know, people have gone under operations, like under hypnosis, and they didn't bleed and all this other kind of stuff. And everybody else at the party is like, whatever, bullshit. That's like, that's not a real thing, blah, blah, blah. So then Kevin Bacon, who's like a little bit tipsy, this is his sister-in-law, and he's always like giving her shit about her stupid, like, New Age beliefs and all this other kind of shit. He's like, you know, come on, hypnotize me, prove you can do it, and all this other stuff. Now, I love the hypnotism sequence. Now, I should say that I watched like a bunch of like interviews with the actors and the director and everything like that, and they actually really did their homework. They went to actual hypnotists because they wanted to see like what, like how you would really do it, like how, like when Ileana Douglas's character Lisa, when she hypnotizes Tom, she's like, I wanted it to be like as realistic as possible, like with the cadence of the voice and the stuff they would say and all this other stuff. And they also went and got hypnotized by a hypnotist so they would know what it would feel like. But one thing I really love about the hypnotism sequence is that they show it from Kevin Bacon's point of view. Like, you see, like, Ileana Douglas's face, like, and she's saying, you know, all the stuff, like, trying to get him to relax and stuff. And then, like, the screen goes, like, his eyes are closing. And then he just starts seeing, like, all these weird, like, disjointed images. And then, like, a second later, he wakes up and everybody at the party is, like, looking at him like, what the fuck? That was the weirdest thing I ever saw. So they don't show what he did or what he said when he was under. But, like, they were all saying, she's like, oh, I stuck a pin through your hand and you said it didn't hurt. And then the other guy was saying, you were talking about this kid that used to beat you up and you were crying and all this other kind of shit. Mm-hmm. But it's like, I like that they didn't show that. They just, like, they showed what he saw, like, in a split second. But then they just showed everyone reacting to it and, like, talking about it. Like, that was the craziest thing ever. So I really like how they did that. I also have to say that I really like the how they showed him getting hypnotized. Because when she's talking to him, you know, and she's telling him to, like, picture this big theater. And that's actually a real, like, big old school movie house. It's in Joliet, Illinois, I think, the one that they used. And she's saying just, you know, picture this big thing and, like, all the walls are black and all the seats are black and, like, all you can see is the screen. And then, you know, the screen gets closer and closer and all of a sudden it says sleep across it. And so I just really, really liked it. It had this really weird, like, unsettling kind of creepy vibe to it. And also I like when they did it later, like when he's kind of reflecting back on the hypnotism and they show him in his chair and he's, like, floating through the theater. And it's just this really great, like, incongruous kind of image. And I thought they did it with CGI, but they said they didn't. They put him on a crane and, like, pulled him through the theater. And then they kind of, like, digitally rubbed out the crane. Hmm. So he was actually, like, flying through the air in the theater. They didn't do it with, you know, a thing. So once he gets hypnotized, he starts seeing all these freaky, like, images. Like, him and his wife are, like, having sex. And he's, like, seeing this hand, like, with a fucking fingernail breaking off and just, like, blood splattering on the floor. And he's like, what the fuck? And he doesn't know what's going on.
We're in spoilers territory
now. Yeah, this is spoilers territory.
If you want to see this movie, but you want to see it now.
Because I told you I was going to spoil it. I just started doing that now.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he starts seeing all this crazy shit and he doesn't know what it is. And it's starting to keep him awake. Now, he goes downstairs and suddenly he sees this girl, like, sitting on his couch. And she's obviously a ghost. Like, she looks... I mean, she doesn't look like diaphanous or anything like that. She looks like a girl, but she looks like a dead... You know, she has, like, that coloring and, like, she's breathing. You can see, like, her breath because, like, it's cold or whatever. And she says something to him, and I think... I was trying to make out what it was. I think she says, can you hear me? Or I think you can hear me. I think that's what she says, but it's kind of all fucked up. Now, the creepy thing about that is that after he sees that and he's kind of wigging out because he only sees her for a second and then she goes away. And then he sees his son, Jake, at the top of the stairs. And the kid says, Daddy, you're awake now. And he means now you can see ghosts like I can see them, because he couldn't see them before. So he starts seeing all this shit. So he calls Lisa up, the sister, and he's like, what the fuck did you do? It's like, did you give me some, like, you know, post-hypnotic suggestion or something? And she's like, what do you think? I don't know what I'm doing and all this other kind of crap. And then she's like, oh yeah, I kind of did. You know what I mean? And he's like, what? She's like, all I said was I wanted you to be more open-minded. So I said that you should be more open to things. So now it's like all this shit is like rushing into his fucking head all the time and he can't stop it. And I think one of the cool things about the movie is that you can see that he's getting like more and more obsessed, like as the movie goes on, with what this dead girl that he keeps seeing, like, what all these images mean, what does she want from me, because she just keeps bugging him, and she keeps showing up, and he can't sleep, and he can't go to work, and, you know, so at some point, you kind of, like, through all these conversations and stuff that they're having with, like, their neighbors, you find out that the girl that he's seeing is this girl who... the one guy calls her the retard, but she's not retarded. She's just, like, you know, mentally challenged. They said she had the mentality of, like, an 8-year-old or something like that. Even though when they show her later on, she doesn't seem all that dumb. She just seems a little naive.
Yeah, what's happened is, you know, when after you know, she hypnotized him, he's basically acquired what you had in The Shining, you know, with The Shining.
Yeah.
That same ability. And the boy has it, you know.
He's had it the whole time, yeah.
He's born with it. So it's a bunch of callbacks and shout-outs to The Shining in it, too.
Yeah, there's a total Halloran call-out.
And what else did it? What else did it?
It also homaged...
The Dead Zone.
The Dead Zone, clearly.
It did that one, too.
Yep.
With the come up to the gazebo. He doesn't say gazebo, but yeah, it's same... Gazebo,
but he used the same tone.
Same thing to get that girl to come up there, you know, onto the porch.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, so it's Stephen King reader.
Well, he wanted to homage, there's also a kind of an oblique homage to The Tenant, which he also did a review of where he...
Yeah, his teeth fall out.
Yeah, well, he pulls, like, one tooth out. You know, so there was that whole thing, and then, like, the tooth he throws in the sink looks like the one that Roman Polanski found in the
well. Yeah, he's having all these visions that are coming from ghosts, and it's about this murder mystery, this murder case that's happened.
Which
and
they didn't even know was a murder.
He didn't even know there was a murder.
They thought she just ran away. They were just like, oh, well, she was just a retarded girl. girl, yeah, and she disappeared about 6 months ago. She ran off.
It's kind of a slow burn, but I wouldn't say it was as slow as say, like, Changeling. Remember the...
Yeah.
But it's, you know, that same kind of thing where there's a person died and is seeking justice. Kind of that it's that same concept. But it was a pretty good movie.
Yeah, I liked it. I mean, I liked it a lot. Like I said, a lot of that, there are a few digital effects, but not many. They did most of the stuff in camera, and I especially liked how they did the ghost, whose name is Samantha. They have her look solid, but they have her kind of like, you know, look like her eyes are all sunken and stuff. And they actually shot her in front of a green screen at a different frame rate than the rest of the actors. So when she walks, it's kind of like what you saw later on, like in a lot of the Asian horror and stuff, where they just have this like really weird, like otherworldly kind of movement because they're moving at a different speed to everyone else. So they had her moving like that. I wanted to say too that, like I said, they homaged The Tenant. They homaged The Shining big time.
Poe, too.
Yeah.
Because, you know, to solve the puzzle, there's all these messages coming through Kevin Bacon's... I'm going to call him Kevin Bacon. His name's Tom. Tom's visions and his son's coming up with clues, too. And he finds out that a murder's happened in his area. It was a long time back. And he actually knew the murderers, at least one of them, didn't he?
Well, it was in his house, too, because his house was rented, like I said. So it had happened before he had moved into the house.
Right. And, you know, like I said, spoilers, it turns out that, she's buried up in the walls.
Yeah, she's, like, up in the wall.
Yeah. And, you know, he touches her, and then he gets a vision of how she died.
Yeah.
And who did it.
Which is what she wanted. She wanted to be found, and then she wanted to be, like, free. Yeah. And she wanted somebody to know what had happened to her, because her family just thought she ran off. They didn't know that she was dead.
The Halloran callback is cop.
They're at a funeral.
Yeah, and he's a cop, and he's got some kind of a psychic group going on when he's not working. It looks, remember that? They were having that, I might have been candomblé.
Yeah.
Or some kind of a voodoo.
That's what I was thinking, too,
I think candomblé. And they were, you know, and he's talking to spirits and stuff, but what was I going to say about the about that guy, about that character? Yeah, it doesn't matter.
No, I was saying, well, there was
one... something I was going to say about that guy, about how he helped solve the...
There was one scene where Jake, the little boy, first meets him in the funeral, because he hears, like, the...
Oh, that's right. He told him that ghost wasn't going to go away. That he had to figure out what the deal was. That's the whole purpose.
Yeah, he said, because, well, he didn't say that to the little boy. He actually said what the guy said, he said it to the mom.
Yeah.
He said,
that's right, the mom.
He said, you know, the boy has the power, but you don't. He's like, so it must be daddy.
Right.
She's like, he's like, tell dad to come and see me because I can tell him what's going on.
Yeah, he wouldn't go. No,
but he didn't go. But she didn't tell him. She went anyway because she was like, what the fuck is going on with him?
Yeah.
It's like he's acting like a crazy person. And, you know, he's tearing up the whole entire house because she had told him to dig, but she didn't tell him where.
Yeah.
So he's just like digging up the yard and digging up the house and trying to find where her body is. I wanted to say, too, that I think, and you can kind of see this, it's sort of subtle, but the actor said that they watched a bunch of horror movies beforehand because David Koepp said, you know, this is, you know, what I want you to, this is what we're going for. So I wanted, one of them was The Dead Zone, one of them was Rosemary's Baby, one of them was Don't Look Now, which we also did a review of, and and I think Repulsion also, that other Roman Polanski movie. But yeah, so there's a lot of really great little... kind of homage. It's not like super obvious. It's not like, hey, look, it's like a fucking, but you know, it's kind of like a cool little Easter egg type of.
Yeah.
I especially liked that Dead Zone homage because I had forgotten all about that. But then like when we saw that scene, like near the end, I was like, oh yeah, that is just like the Dead Zone. And he used like the exact same
wording, pretty much
like tone of voice and like the exact same. So I thought that was really cool.
And it's instead of that yellow jacket, he was wearing a black jacket.
Yeah.
Remember, he's wearing a black jacket, kind of like Johnny wore from Dead Zone.
Yeah.
So.
But that was definitely one of the ones that David Koepp was. Because everything that I've read about David Koepp is like he's a huge film buff and he really likes horror movies, especially like psychological ones and ghost stories and stuff. So he really did like a lot of his homework when he was making this movie because he wanted that same kind of like classic feel to it.
It's a good movie, but I would say that this would, I'm going to tell you, this is I don't think it would ever do as well at the box office up against the M. Night, what was the M. Night movie?
Sixth Sense.
Sixth Sense. It's just, the movie is too tailored for a connoisseur and people that have very long attention spans. People like you and who like, and you know, who like very involved mystery type stories.
Yeah.
The average person doesn't like those. They don't really even like them, you know. They like them even less today, I think. I think I saw an article said that it's really hard for them to make movies nowadays because, like, the average attention span is about 45 seconds. So they can't put a whole lot in them
anymore.
Which is
weird because movies nowadays are so much longer than they used to be back in the old days.
Yeah, it's just constant action. There's not a whole, you know, the story's told in pictures, not in words.
Although, like I said, that, you know, I think there's always going to be
It's like a ride at Disneyland now.
I mean, I think there's always going to be an audience for it because, I mean, especially in horror, I think the last few years, even the last 15 years.
It's a different genre.
Yeah, there's definitely been, you know, kind of a rise in, like, prestige horror movies that are, you know, like stuff like The Witch and stuff like that that's very subtle and very slow burn, but, like, still creepy.
It's this type of thing. If you like that, then this is it.
Yeah.
But that is a niche market.
Oh, yeah.
The average person who's just walking around inside of a theater, oh, this thing, what are we going to see?
Well, yeah.
Remember, we see that great movie now. That was a terrible movie. Remember, some of these guys coming out of the theater, they don't understand what they've seen.
Well, yeah.
Especially if they're on A-list because they're just...
They're just seeing it
because they can't... They can't even grasp what they see. So, you know, a lot of the stuff is just wasted on people. Like, look at Men in Black International.
Okay? Yeah.
It looked good. It was a constant, like, Disneyland ride from beginning to end. But once it was over, it was vanished. It leaves no impact on you. You immediately forget a lot of it.
Yeah, it was like a fine... It was fine.
It's because,
like,
there's no real content in it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it while I was watching it, but I didn't, like, remember anything about it after.
There's no real content in it, and it's just like a visual... Disneyland ride. That's really what it's like. Look at this. It's for children, basically. Big adult grown children.
Yeah.
That's what it's for.
But I'm, you know, the thing about it...
doesn't seem to be doing too well in the box office right now, but that's the kind of movies that make a lot of money.
Yeah. You know? This one actually made, I think it only cost $12 million to make, and I think it made twice its budget. I think it made $24
million. Yeah, that's not...
So it was third at the box office.
It's not a bomb.
But obviously it wasn't as successful as, you know, Sixth Sense or Blair Witch Project, because Blair Witch Project cost like $1.50 to make.
They claim it's supposed to triple its budget in order to make profit.
Yeah.
If you've doubled your money, you still kind of lost, evidently, because they were betting on... a lot more than that.
Yeah, although I'm not sure. I mean, this movie, I don't think, you know, I don't think they did like a huge amount of, you know, publicity for it or media
promotion
or like that.
Promotion costs.
That eats up a lot of the cost.
Of it, right.
So whether this, I mean, like I said, and I remember seeing this at the time and really, really liking it and liking it more than The Sixth Sense, actually. And it stuck with me more than The Sixth Sense did. And I also, like, it's just one of those ones that just kind of made a big impression on me when I first saw it. And, you know, every time I revisit it, like, I like it even more because I catch, like, more little details and stuff. Because there's a lot of, like, little details and stuff that I miss.
And that's what makes it for a connoisseur.
Yeah.
A Sixth Sense is just general audience because there aren't any little
details.
Although
I like that movie, too.
It's a good movie. But that is, like, a very simple movie that
anybody
who just walks off the street can go in there and they'll be drawn into it. They remember it. And they go, oh, yeah, and then they understood it. And that was a good movie.
Although I have to say The Sixth Sense, and I just watched it again probably 6 months ago maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd call it a slow burner, but it's not like an action movie by any means. It's a drama, I mean, pretty much. Yeah. So it's not like it was so much... I mean, that's what this one is, too. And in some ways, I kind of like this one better because, like I said, the characters are more grounded. They seem more like real people. Their interactions are, like, funny, kind of, because they're, like, regular people and they're, like, in this weird situation. But not in a way that's, like, calling attention to itself.
Yeah, The Sixth Sense is a lot simpler movie, though. It has a lot fewer characters. It's really only two characters.
True.
They're doing most of it. And it's just, you know, you can process it very easily. On a first viewing,
you don't really, like I said, you don't really need to.
That was cool. And that was
I like ones that you can watch over and over again and catch new shit or like see things in a new light. Like, because I think that's like what the best art does.
Yeah,
I mean, if you just see something once and you like it, but you never want to watch it again because you didn't give a shit about it.
Yeah,
then I think it's kind of failed.
Yeah, it's like, well, look at Prometheus. Prometheus failed. I love Prometheus. Watch that bitch a million times.
He has
trying to figure it out.
Yeah, because
and
he's
all
come
the extended
up
stuff.
After we saw it, like for a year after we saw it, he was coming up with all new
all
theories.
All the symbolism
about, like,
of the Rubik's Cube and the puzzle and the.
But see, you like that too.
Yeah, I love it.
See,
yeah.
I love that kind
I
of
love that. But that bitch bombed in the theaters. You know what I mean? Everybody hated it. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
The general audience. They're not into that kind of shit.
Well, like I said, that's why
that was dumb. And, you know, then
that's why
talk about...
that's why I always like to see things for myself because I don't because other motherfuckers are not me.
Yeah.
So it's like I don't know if I'm gonna am I gonna like that movie? I don't know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't really even because shit. I have like friends that usually have the same taste as me, but sometimes they like stuff that I don't like, and vice versa.
Yeah.
So well, you can never really tell.
They said that, you know, a lot of guys, you know, they didn't like Prometheus because it didn't fit, you know what I mean, video game lore, you know what I mean, for Alien.
Yeah.
And, you know, they said, well, it didn't make sense. Now it made sense. It's just that you had different expectations.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, like I said, why
were the scientists, you know, why were they dumb? They go, well, they had a geologist that didn't care about aliens and a biologist that did that was also afraid of aliens. You know what I mean? It's because the human crew wasn't running the mission. The robot was.
Yeah.
And the replicant, which, you know, Miss Shaw. That's a fucking replicant. Yeah.
Shaw wasn't a replicant.
Oh, no, what was her name? Miss Vickers. Miss Vickers was the fucking, was a replicant.
Yeah.
But, anyway. That was my trip movie. And I even liked Covenant.
Yeah.
I liked Alien Covenant, too.
Nobody liked that one. I liked it.
Yeah, I liked it. All the references to the fucking old gods and stuff like that and Greek stuff. And
yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, like I said, this is one that if you're really into, like, supernatural movies, if you like murder mysteries, if you like kind of slow-burning, kind of creepy movies, and you haven't seen this one, then you definitely should, because I feel like this is one that gets forgotten about a lot, and that's kind of a shame, just because it came out at the same time as, like, these two big behemoths of horror that are considered classics now, and I think this one kind of gets forgotten about, even though in a lot of ways I think it's... I don't know if I'm going to say it's better than Blair Witch Project, because it's two different completely
Oh,
different.
I'm going to say it's better than Blair Witch
Project. I really liked Blair Witch Project, but this... I don't like to compare, because it's a completely different genre, really. Yeah, they're both horror movies, but they're not the same kind of movie. But I actually like this better. And I like The Sixth Sense, but I actually liked this better. I liked the murder mystery aspect of it. I thought it was creepier. I thought it was more effective. I liked the characters more.
It was a pretty movie. It looked a lot. It looked a lot like Flatliners, which I like that motif. I like that look.
Yeah,
it wasn't as strong, but it was still kind of there.
Yeah, like I said, it wasn't quite as over the top as Flatliners. Which, I had forgotten like how giallo
saw
that
flat,
shit works.
Yeah, saw Flatliners, and I was like, damn, I forgot.
I forgot
what a pretty movie looked like. They don't make these anymore.
Yeah, but I mean, this one is not. It's more toned down than that, but it has like a similar. It has like a similar kind of cinematographic.
Flatliners was gothed out, man.
It really was, yeah.
All Catholic.
But yeah, so definitely check this one out. You'll probably really like it. And I also wanted to recommend, what was the movie that we watched the other night? And I said, oh, we have to mention this on the show. I don't know if we're going to do a whole like review of it because it's not that old. But if you really, really like super creepy, like, Last Will and Testament of Rosalind Lee.
Yeah, I gotta see that one again.
It's on Shudder.
Yeah.
It's a slow, but like, if you liked The Witch, if you liked I'm the Pretty Thing That Lives in the House, if you liked that type of movie, which is like a slow burn, and it's just like, it's really creepy, like, and you supernatural kind
it's
of
just
shit.
It's like a funeral movie, man.
Yeah, and it was written and directed by the guy that founded Rue Morgue magazine, which is like the best horror magazine on earth. Comes out of Canada. I used to buy it every month, but I can't afford it anymore. But it's a really good magazine. But this was a movie that he wrote and directed, and it's just super, super creepy. It just like sucked me right in, and it just had all those like creepy imagery. And it's like nothing like jumping out in your face, nothing like that.
No,
it's
just creeping you
it's
out.
It's just really, really subtle. Like the whole atmosphere is really
subtle.
Yeah,
I've got to see that one again.
Like, yeah, and I love that kind of shit. And if you like that kind of shit, then you should definitely check out Stir of Echoes. Read the book too, because the book is really good. But really, you should read everything that Richard Matheson wrote, because he's awesome.
Right.
So that will do it for this latest movie retrospective. Hope you enjoyed it. Remember, if you like the show, like, share, subscribe on all your social media. If you'd like to financially support the show, it would be much appreciated. You can go to our Patreon page, Patreon.com. patreon.com/13oclockpodcast, or you can go to our blog, 13oclockpodcast.wordpress.com, and there is a little button in the sidebar to a PayPal account if you'd like to give a one-time donation. Remember, our movie retrospectives come out every Friday, and our 13 o'clock matinee, 3 new movies in theater, that comes out every Sunday, and our regular episodes come out every Tuesday. If you're a patron, you get access to them 24 hours before they go live to everyone else, so might want to look into that. We will see you next time. Bye.